Blog Talk Radio.
Come on.
Tonight, I want to tell you a little bit about him, and before I do, let's do as we always do, and just look briefly to the Lord. Lord, please let the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, for you are our strength, you are our Redeemer. Oh, I tell you, since we've been together last, I'm trusting that you've been blessed. I know you're highly favored. And with all that's going on around us in our society, in the news, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, we have one who's with us tonight who is certainly no stranger to issues that communities face. And he's a young man who travels around the world speaking to teens, speaking to adult groups about the importance of focusing on solutions rather than problems. This young man, William Dunn, and those who know him well, call him Dunn. He's conducted workshops in Italy, Amsterdam, Holland, and he's worked with People to People Ambassadors, which is a youth program. He's going to talk a bit about that on tonight, I believe. I made his acquaintance through a friend of mine because he's also a military war veteran, and he and a friend of mine served together, but he's fought in Operation Iraqi Enduring Freedom War from 2002 to 2003. This young man is an author. I mean, there's so many things to his credit. He's an author of the book Broken Wings, Inspirational Words. It's based on a true story about him, his life experiences, and it's written from poetic intellect. But listen, what I want to do tonight, I don't want to belabor the time because I want us to have as much time as possible to hear from William Dunn, or as we know him, Dunn, tonight. So I want to welcome you to be with us tonight. Dunn, God bless you, and thank you for being with us on tonight.
Thank you for having me, Leslie. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Oh, it's certainly our pleasure. And we have put the information out there. We want to have people know that they can join in with the dialogue with you on tonight. We're so looking forward to what it is you're going to share with us about improving relationships between our minority youth, our men, and police, because so much is going on.
right.
in our communities now, right? And
absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we're watching, you know, black males, black youth be faced with things that, you know, we weren't faced with when we were younger. Or, you know, they're having to go to school to witness kids being shot in school, things that we didn't have to do. You know, back then it was a schoolyard fight and it was over with. People were friends and they walked away. You know, they're having to deal with, you know, mass killings and murders that are happening right next door to them. You know, so they're faced with so many different challenges today. And so, you know, we realize that the way the world operates now, I mean, systematically, you know, there are some areas that we need to be able to improve on. And we know that things are not going to change overnight because it didn't happen overnight. You know, this issue that we, you know, more recently, the Charleston issue with the individual going into the church and shooting up, you know, the black members of that church. It's just one indicator, you know. Unfortunately, you know, it's not new per se, but it's just another indicator that we need to be able to address issues and have a conversation about these issues of how, one, we could be able to get past some of the systematic challenges that we have, and two, how we can help improve behaviors and change in our youth, you know, so they can feel comfortable, you know, as they're moving forward and trying to get past some of the issues as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
well,
one of the things that
tonight,
I know we talked about, you know, you and I have talked, and again, for any of the listeners, who want to chime in, is how we can change one youth at a time. You know, I mean, oftentimes those of us who work with young people realize that we want to be able to take them to a different level, or we want them to go to a different level, or we want things for them. But, you know, we can't take a youth anywhere or think that we can fathomly take them where we want them to go until we first find out where they're at. And finding out where they're at is allowing them the voice to be able to speak, allowing them the opportunity to be able to talk. Now, before I can just touch on the youth part, let me also, you know, because we're going to have kind of a real talk discussion about how systematically we're watching these issues that go on between police and youth across the country. You know, in the last decade, we've watched those numbers go into the thousands. More recently, that was a survey that was done by the FBI that talked about in the last 2 years, over 586 murderers of black men in the hands of the police. Then we can go way back to Rodney King and talk about issues that how long it's been. But, you know, one way I think that can help improve those relations is not only do we need to tell youth, of course, about what they need to be aware of when they're being approached by the police, but we need to also have a conversation with the police about how they need to approach a youth. Now, we those of us that work with young people constantly remind young people, teachers, pastors, of course, coaches, we all remind youth that in order for me to help you, you can't walk up to me and be disrespectful. We're not going to want to help or start to even think about helping them if we're doing that. So we also need to start having a conversation with the police department or bring it into play that, you know, it's okay to be able to show a human side of when you're approaching a young man. You know, a police job, you know, just like military or any security job or job where you're protecting and serving, it's a position. You know, it's not a position. It's not that you're better. It's not that your position makes you a better person or above a person. It just makes you a different person. It's a position. Those of us that go to work know that customer service is extremely important to be able to get things done or to be able to please the customer or to be able to live in the world. And we need to start having those type of conversations where the training is different. You know, police, and this is not a knock on all of the police departments, but the numbers don't lie. We see as there is an issue. There's a disconnect. There's a problem. See, when you know, if the training is a little different, where there's some sense of, listen, you are serving the community. This is a part of your job description. Your job description is not just to apprehend, you know, and convict.
Right.
It's to also serve and be a part of the community. You know, this is what you're just like I have a job, and you have a job. You know, these are part of your job description. And so, you know, with that being said, there has to be more training that needs to be involved in terms of customer service and how you represent yourself and knowing that, you know, these are people. These young men are people. See, those poor trainings and lack of trainings and lack of emphasis and lack of accountability in these trainings will cause you to hire those individuals like you had with the George Zimmerman and the Trayvon Martin issue, guys who think that they can just, you know, take the law into their own hands. Or those who, he didn't even have a badge, but yet was in, you know, police academy. Or you're going to have the individual that jumped out in Houston a few weeks ago that immediately jumped out of his car with his weapon pointed to a youth and put his knee on a young girl's head as if, you know, she mean anything. See, without that training, you're going to have the officer that shot Walter Scott in the back and then, you know, try to plant evidence as if he did something or that he encouraged him to do that. Without training, you're going to have the officer that killed Michael Brown that watched him lay down for 3 hours as if he was like an animal. In fact, they treat animals even better because they come and get animals out of the street. So without that type of training, you're going to have those officers who all get on Eric Garner and because of his cigarettes that feel like, you know, that he violated some major law that really wasn't a violation. If so, it was a fine of $50. So without having training and looking at the screening process of who you're hiring, you're going to get those type of individuals who we're asking to not just to apprehend or protect and serve. We're giving them weapons. You know, we're giving them access. We're separating them or allowing them to feel they can separate themselves from the rest of the community. Mm-hmm. And until we, you know, bring, you know, those type of conversations, and these are called accountability. If you're at your job and you are not producing, and you know, and you are not, you know, following protocol, or you are not working according to what the description of what I hired you for, most jobs you know, you would get written up, or you just wouldn't have that job. You know,
right.
Wouldn't get a raise. It would be some type of consequences. But we're watching these issues that go on. We're watching, you know, George Zimmerman walk.
I believe that
watching,
a lot of what we're seeing now,
right.
People are frustrated.
Right.
Don't you say that? I mean, see that? I mean, and I think that a part of it is, at least from what I've heard, you know, a lot of people are feeling like, okay, so we see the systemic challenges. We know that people are upset, they're angry, they're frustrated. Polls have been taken. People don't really feel as though they can trust law enforcement to protect them. I mean, I raised 4 sons. I mean, you know, I would hate for them to be teens on the street today just simply because they are African-American males. But I think it seems to continue to come back to people feeling hopeless, like, okay, so what do I do? What can I do? I'm powerless to be able to do anything, you know. We talk about the changes that need to happen, but what can we do as individuals in our communities? Now, before we start up again, I want to make sure that people understand that as they're dialed in, all you have to do at any time is just press 1, and we'll bring you in during the conversation. If you have questions, you want to have comments, to join Dunn during the conversation. But what do we say to people who are just basically frustrated in our communities, and this is how we see it play out?
We know that these systematic issues that we have are not going to change overnight. You know, there are some policy changes and some cultural changes that need to happen. And, you know, some political changes, and that we know those things are not going to happen overnight. But one of the things we can do is be more encouraging to our youth. Be more encouraging, meaning that have more conversation with them. You know, so if you're working with young people, whether it be in your youth ministry or whether it be in your community centers or in your nonprofit group, you know, we can talk to them and give them resources and opportunities. One way we know for sure that helps improve your own situation is education. One of the biggest, I would say, disservices that happened in the school systems, you know, years back is when they took all the vocational programs out of the high schools and not making it mandatory for kids to be able to learn a skill and a trade. I think that was such a great disservice. I mean, now if a kid is not college bound, they're left to graduate or possible graduate if they even academically graduate. Now, trying to be able to find what's next, next, you know. So they're running out. They feel like those are the only options. So we to give more options and allow them to have more options and help them to be able to see these are realistic options, such as learning a trade. Right now, one of the places that we know that a kid can learn a trade is in prison. And isn't that kind of crazy? That if they go to prison, they teach them trades so that they can build life in place and help fix things to make the economy better. But why not talk about some preventive ways to keep them from going to prison by saying, listen, these are some of the options that you have right here. And so part of that is that, you know, if we can come together, whether it be churches, nonprofits, and create programs where, you know what, you can learn how to be a mechanic, you know, in this 9-week program. We're going to sponsor this right here. All you have to do is show up. We're not going to care about your background. We're not going to do a background check on you. If you've had a charge when you were young, you know, we're not going to use that against you. We're going to say if you want to be a part of this program or want to be a part of this, this is what you will have to be able to do. You know, those are realistic things that we can do. Those are things that we can not only have a conversation, but we can help them with that. You know, we can let them know that there are other options out there that can allow you to be able to kind of present yourself and make your situation better. Because, see, one of the things you're saying is that people are frustrated.
Yeah.
That's one. And they feel like they don't have options. Now,
cause a pause right here because we have a caller who wants to interject something. So before you go down another road, let's see if they have something to say about what the discussion has been thus far. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
that's pretty
great. All right. Well, caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Bless
Hello.
You. Thank you for being with us on tonight.
Yes. How you doing? This is Ahmed.
Ahmed. Okay,
Ahmed,
where are you
up, soldier?
All right. How you feel, Ben? That's my brother.
I'm doing good,
brother.
My
All
man.
Right.
I'm doing good. Hey, go ahead and chime in on these issues, on things that you feel we can help be able to improve.
Yeah,
the
subject is so strong. It hurts. It makes us frustrated. But we all have to hold our heads and try to make, you know, amends to all situations, grown-ups, children, babies having babies. See, we grew up with that village concept. We don't have that anymore.
Right.
We have some businesses.
Right.
We try to, you know, talk to all the children that come in. We try to
right.
do the best that we can. There's a lot of single parents out here,
right.
fatherless
right.
children.
Mm-hmm.
So we play a part. As myself, I play big brother, father, uncle, teacher, counselor. You know, we try to do the best that we can. So sometimes we don't understand what really goes on, even as far as the adults. We look at the children as if they're going to attack us, like we're afraid of the children.
Right.
You know, instead of saying, hey, how's it going? Young man, how's it going today? How are you? You know, what are you doing out here? You going to school?
Right.
You got a job? You're looking for a job? I know a few people, you know. What's your name? You know, come on inside. Let me, you know, sit down and have a talk. You know,
right.
see what's on their mind sometimes.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Because it's like an attack on children on all sides, the police, parents, you know, adults. You know, we all look at them like, hey, you're a problem. We don't
right.
take the time to sit down and talk to them to see what's going on in their mind. We're on their minds. Excuse me, I'm a little tired. I just took a shower. And
right.
I had to take
right.
my
That's
time.
A good point, I mean, we realized,
my brother.
You know, if I can chime in, that the village
yeah,
was much bigger back then, you know.
Yes.
So now our village is smaller. You know, back then we all kind of looked out for each other. You know, we know in the 60s that was 20,000 black babies born per month to unwed mothers. So it's,
oh, yeah.
parenthood is not new. We know
right.
that's not new at all, but the village was bigger. There was somebody in the neighborhood that was can help you out and give you an opportunity or even tell you what you're doing wrong and give
yes.
you an opportunity to become better. So you're right, our village is so much smaller now that our arms are, as my grandmother would say, our hands are not close.
Right.
You know, we don't have our hands close.
Mm-hmm. The whole neighborhood parent does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays,
that's
you don't
true.
Get that anymore. You know, you got babies having babies. they don't know what direction to go. Nobody taught them the way, you know. So it's hard, man, you know. So we all need to reach out to the children, even to each other. Some brothers pass by each other, see each other every day, don't even speak, you know. A whole lot of stuff has to change. So it starts within us, man. So, you know, I'm here for your brother anytime you need me, man, and I'm glad you're on the program, speaking like you always speak, you know. And just, you know, I got your back.
I do. Yep, yep. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Brother Ahmad. We're going to put you back on hold. We appreciate you. Wow. Dunn, what do you think about that? I know you said the village is a lot smaller, and we can attest to what he said, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean,
our youth need that, the big brother, the father, the uncle, you know, that type of, not necessarily blood-related, but I can attest to that even growing up, that the village was there. We didn't refer to it as such, but we knew who was in our communities. Now we have neighbors. We don't even know who lives in our neighborhoods a lot of times.
Right. You know who live beside you. You stay beside them for years.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're right that the village is smaller. Our sense of helping is different.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as adults, you know, one of the things adults need to realize, and then this is, you know, I know we was going to talk about this a little later about kids. You know, we recently had a youth summit, and I asked the question to the kids, tell me something that you think that adults need to know that kids go through. And they said, well, one is you adults, you guys need to know that y'all was once teenagers too. I think we forget that sometimes, and I think also our patience. We don't have the same patience that people have for us. You know, we forgot that all of us didn't get it right the first time. You know, there are some, you know, we practice some of the same behaviors. Sometimes some of us did some worse things, and that somebody continued to be patient with us. You know, we've lost patience when it comes down to our young people and feel that if they don't listen one time or if one youth doesn't listen, they're going to talk to no more youth or they're not going to try to help any more youth. You know, that's what, and that too hurts the village concept and doesn't create better community when we don't feel like we have patience. Realize that sometimes we might not get it right now. They may need to have reminders. Someone, you know, we knew back then that, you know, we didn't get it right now, that somebody else would give it to us another day. You know, they didn't stop teaching. They didn't stop helping just because we didn't listen. And so we need to, you know, get back to that concept. You know, we don't have enough of our hands that are out saying, here I am. Excuse me. You know, we don't have enough of those hands out, you know, for the kids to be able to reach. You know, now they have to, you know, try to find who's available and wonder who's available. So it's a lack of trust. And so if we're not trusted within our own community, how can we even think that we're going to be able to trust outside of our community? You know, and if we're not working on building those relationships, where are we going to build relationships? So there are some things that we could do every single day that doesn't require a policy to be written. It doesn't require us to have to go to legislation. That things that we could do every single day, like anyone that's listening could do. You could say, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to challenge myself to say, there's a youth, whether it be my own nephew, own cousin, that I'm going to keep my hands closed. I'm going to just talk to him, but I'm going to help him. I'm going to bring him to work and teach him something that can help him or her better their situation. You know, and I'm going to be patient with them. You know, and we'd be amazed, man, how kids really want to learn. Kids don't want disorganization. They want to learn. You know, I believe that. I believe that kids
want
structure.
And they want to belong.
Yeah, they want structure.
Yeah, don't you know I said in a setting on this past Friday, and it was all about the gang culture, which I know you're familiar with. But I learned a lot about that in terms of youth wanting to belong, them wanting to have an identity. And we're not dealing with youth today who are just going to sit back and shut up and be docile, but we have to learn how to relate to them and understand that when our youth are sent away, we saw some footage from youth who are being sent to Rikers, to prison, and they are not learning things in there. They're at a place where there are just no rules. It's the rules of the jungle. You know, it's the survival of the fittest. And then they come back to society, and they're supposed to fit in. I hear us talking about what do we do before our youth have to go to those extremes of feeling like they belong somewhere.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Just a blatant cry for, you know, hear me, see me, you know, understand that I'm hurting.
Right.
that type of thing. That's thing, what I think is resonating in our communities. And then
right.
when we respond out of fear,
right.
then the result
right.
is horrific, because you have adults mm-hmm. who once made up the village, but now we're afraid of our children.
Right.
You know, give up the run of the home to the children. The community is overrun by, you know, youth who really want structure or whatever. So
right.
the whole community suffers. What do you say about that?
Well, you know, one is I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. We have to celebrate, let's celebrate what they're doing well.
Right.
And not spend so much energy on all the things that are going wrong in society. More recently, independent candidate, you know, this whole Republican, I don't know what you want to call it, it's just anybody can just put their name in and run for presidency. So I think I may do it next year as well, too.
Yeah, why not?
But, you know, more recently you heard the independent a candidate out of Vermont, Bernie Sanders, state that a black baby boy born in today's society, one out of three of them will go to prison in a lifetime, you know, based on statistical data. Now, of course, he was saying it in such a way that he was trying to help, and he was saying, you know, we need to change. So, of course, he's trying to attract the African-American vote and saying,
right.
so we need to change, you know, we need to come up with this change. Then we hear individuals talk about, you know, there are more black men incarcerated than any other race or ethnic group. There are not enough good black men around. Black youth are scoring at 30% and 40% on their reading and English and math, and according to, you know, to other ethnic groups, are scoring at 80% and 90%. Black juveniles are arrested at a higher rate, suspended 2 to 3 times more than any other group. So all the negative stats, believe it or not, when you start filtering constant negativity to a kid and to young people, after a while they start to feel that that's the max of their options. You know, they don't hear about, you know, the fact that, you know, we have over 200 historical black colleges that have over 35% enrollment of black males, not to mention over 400 major colleges and universities that watch enrollment shot up in the last decade of black males, or the 30,000 black engineers a year that we're bringing into society, or the black millionaires, male millionaires. You know why? Because we watch the NBA at 85% black. We watch the NFL at over 70% black, and we watch the Major League Baseball at 12%. But we're watching those individuals, they're millionaires. So we don't talk about, you know, that. And I even talked about the business sector and the guys who are making money who are in the music industry that are doing well. You know, we need to talk to the kids and celebrate about the good things that are going on. You can do this too. You know,
right.
you can be this. You know, I can talk about that. They can see it. They need to be able to touch people that are doing something different. You know, oftentimes we measure our success based on how we are or how better we are than the next person, versus saying, you know what, if no one in your household graduated from high school and you graduated, then you made it. Now, we don't want you to stop right there. We want you to keep making it. You know, we need to celebrate what they're doing and how they've been able to get past some of the challenges that they have, and talk to them and give them some realistic numbers. Let them know, listen, we don't want to hear all the negativity that goes on, because then you'll feel like that's all I'm going to do. You know, it don't matter. I'm going to get locked up or whatever. I'm just feeding into the society statistical base of what they're saying that's going to happen to me. That, you know, we need to be able to have different type of dialogue with the kids. And, again, options and helping them, you know, so we can tell them, but it's all right to show a kid how to fill out a college application or fill out an application or to show a kid, you know, how to interview. You know, create these type of systems and create these type of programs that we can do. And any church can start a program tomorrow, job training program for free, you know. And if they're fortunate enough to have a relationship with a company or a business like a Home Depot or a Walmart that they can, you know, work with and say, listen, we're going to have this job training program. If you can just guarantee us that we can get 10 people employed who go through this job training program. That's a conversation. It's not money that's involved. It's a conversation first, and then it's options, and then it's teaching the kids, and it's helping them. So these are things that we can start talking about within our own community and start building these things together. One of the things that the training source I've worked with, the Training Source, which is out of Largo, Maryland, have a program out there. And they have a similar program. And Kim Rim, who's the founder of it, her and I had served on the T&I committee together. One of the things that her program does is she accepts individuals who have a record or have been incarcerated, you know, kind of a reentry program, a reentry opportunity. Requirement is, obviously, that they have to be able to attend the program 8 to 10 weeks, you know, just like school. But it's guaranteed them a job, you know, and she has major relationships with hospitality and hotel industries and construction programs. And so, you know, that's a realistic program. You know, that's a realistic option. You know what I mean?
Well, what is the name of that? What is the name of it? In case somebody is listening. It's called what?
Yes, the Training Source. It's based in, you can Google the Training Source, Kim Rim, R-H-I-M. She's the founder of that program. It's based out of Largo. One can go on and find all the information out about, you know, that job training program that they have. But that's just one example.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Training Source.
We can help better our community. And again, some people, I do believe that people do want to help. I do believe that,
that
people want to help.
I believe that.
I think that sometimes people just don't know how.
That's right.
We can talk that a lot of people may be lazy. But I think that we watch people come together. We watch after 9/11, this whole entire country came together. We watch Hurricane Katrina. We watch people come together. So I do believe people want to help. They just need to be able to find resources and to give them an opportunity where they can do it, where it doesn't take away from them really trying to help themselves as well. You know, and I think that, you know, we can do that. We have those opportunities, those capabilities, and especially in our African-American community. We were very powerful individuals.
That's
we
right.
need to start, you know, speaking of that and balancing our power and our own internal wealth and growth. Once we still, you know, connect the dots, we can do major things, you know, milestones that we can set. You know, when we need to start, you know, speaking of that level of how we can help our young people create milestones, you know, and be a part of history. And think about how we come together when there's a mass killing and a major issue in our marches. Think about this. The last 5 or 6 marches that have happened, we haven't had violence. Thousands and millions of people come together, you know. So if we can do that on that one day, come together, rally, and set it up, then we can do that throughout the year.
Yeah,
you know, so
that's an interesting point that you make, is that we will rally, you know,
right,
when there's something of detriment that happens within our communities. And that same
right
force that brings us together during those times, what is it that causes that to wane and just to, like, you know, dissipate, and then it goes away? It seems like it takes something like that to really,
right,
you know, push us together when there's so many other ways we could come together and really pool our resources, as I hear you saying, invest in our young people and our communities, because there are billions of dollars within the African-American communities across
right
this United States and abroad. You know what I mean? We have billions of dollars
right
to pour into this economy
right
when you pull everything together. But we need to put it within our own communities, and that has for decades been the issue, the problem. I mean, but we're doing it, like you said, one youth at a time. That's really what it takes to be able to
right
pour into one youth at a time, find
right
those in our communities that we can help, that we can reach out to. Listen, we have listeners on the line. All you have to do is press 1 so that we can bring you in on the dialogue. You don't have to stay for the whole hour if you can't, but have something to share with us to contribute to this dialogue so we can hear what's on your hearts and minds on tonight. Just simply press 1 and we'll bring you in on the conversation. All
right.
Right? Well, I'll let you know if someone gives us the go-ahead that they want to join us. But in the meantime, certainly go forward. We're just appreciating what you're sharing on tonight.
Right. Well, you know, and going back to your point about, you know, just the power that we have and, you know, and how we I think someone just chimed in.
No.
Okay, I'm sorry. So just the power that we have.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of our ability to be able to change the world, I think we can go really internally and what some of the like you said, the issues are, or why people seem to kind of move away from the rally point. You know, the rally point, we were at the high level, and then the days after, months after the rally point, we're just back to where we are. I think that
exactly.
For those of us who have made it or got past some of those challenges, we forget. I mean, this is what I'm going to be honest with. We forget our sense of where we came from and mm-hmm. and the humility that we have. You know, my son, who's 15, I used to always tell him that if something was to happen to me, I want to be able to know that I left you with something. And so I started with words. So I would walk him to school every day, and he was like, you know, look at me like I was crazy. And I would say, what's the three H's of life, Tavon? I ask him that. And he, you talking about 7 years old, looking at me, not even thinking. But I would just constantly say, what's the three H's of life? And I made him repeat those words after me until I knew that he could just roll off his tongue. And the three H's of life were heart, hard work, and humbleness. And I explained it in such a sense because I started, you know, traveling around the world and the country talking about how those three H's of life, man, are so important. Well, first of all, man, you have to have heart to put in hard work, okay? So that means you're going to go to work, do some things you probably need, work long hours, things you don't want to do, but that takes heart. You know, you have to study, go to school, you know, when the others are not going to school, you know, that's hard to put that work in. And as a result of that, you're going to get some results. You're going to get some good results when you put in hard work. There are going to be some good results, whether that be athletically, you may get a scholarship, whether that be in the working world, you get a nice job and make good money, whether that be in your life that, you know, you overall have resources and great relationships. Hard work will give you results. But along the way, you cannot forget the sense of humility. Be humble. Because, see, what happens is we get people who make it, who become better, and they forgot where they came from. They lose that sense of humility. They have no humbleness with them. See, humbleness allows you to want to help. When you're humble, you want to help. You know,
right.
You want to be able to help, and you don't stop helping and stop thinking about how you can help, because you're not focusing just on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to think about how our communities are different than what they were back then. Not to say we haven't improved, because there are a lot of areas we have improved on. But there's some areas, there's some deep-rooted areas we need to work on in terms of how we think about helping each other. Well, one is, if you're not humble, if you're arrogant, then you're not thinking about helping nobody. That's not what your thought process. You're thinking, I got mine, you don't have yours, so I don't. Why you don't have yours? Or
right.
Do what
get
I
yours.
Did, get mine.
Yeah.
You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Now, don't we hear that mantra? I got
right,
mine.
Right. We
why don't you
know, that,
go get
that,
yours?
We heard that. You know,
right.
If you're humble, you're saying thank you. Thank
yeah.
you, and I thank all those who helped me get mine.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, I feel like it's my duty to make sure that I help somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
See, my grandmother passed away a few years ago, and as a pillar of my life, and she reminded me, she's 102 years old.
Mm-hmm.
102 years old. Words was extremely powerful that she gave. Always
mm-hmm.
talked about humbleness and made sure she reminded us about being humble and giving, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And said, when you give more than you will receive, you will receive more later. See, we got to kind of think like that, you know. We got to think about that. Like, I challenge everybody, whether they're listening or whether they know somebody, to say, if you give more than you receive, you will get more later. To say, now, how much or how will I give? Man, it doesn't mean you have to give all your money or all your resources. We know people work hard for it, but it doesn't mean you don't give anything at all. You know, and I'm not talking about getting monetary. I'm talking about whether it be your time. So if you're a CEO, you're a manager, you know that a person came to the interview and unprepared, then give them the advice. You know what? You know, you didn't come to the interview prepared, but in the future, let me give you a few tips that may help you.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this job not, but this may help you in another job. Believe it or not, just those little messages alone is how we can help with our community. You know, how we can help. When we think about where we came from and think about what we want to be able to give back, and then think about the results of that, and then leave the option open that if you want to ask questions, just like we're doing then, we have this dialogue, allowing people to be able to chime in, give input, be able to share what you think that we all need to be able to hear. It's not a one sided or two sided conversation between you and I. It's open for everyone to be able to get provide input. And so we think about that every day in our life and how we should be able to give a little bit more. We would definitely be able to improve the relationships that we have. And I'm talking about relationships that will be sustainable. Because right now, I mean, people, and I'm speaking in terms of community, our community, we've kind of lost the ability to talk about how to sustain good relationships. What friendship is all about, you know? Mm-hmm. You know what it is to be cordial, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just those little things right there has caused our youth to kind of go to the left. You know, that it's okay to say yes, sir, no, sir. It's okay to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. It don't make you soft. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
In fact, you know, you separate yourself. You know what I mean? I mean, so we don't have those type of conversations in such a way, and we don't do it in such a sense that we're not attacking the kids. See, we got to realize, too, with the number of households of single parent and the lack of resources, and it's not like how it was back then with the village now. So if we're working with young people now and expect that they automatically going to have it, then you're wrong already. First of all, you should know they don't have it because no one gave it to them. That's what it
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
So if at night, you know, I just came from Detroit recently with our Sound Mind, Sound Body Academy, 1,200 youth. That's how many kids I spoke to. And I asked the question, how many of you guys, when you are at home at night, and you have an issue, and it's challenging to you, can you get up and go in the next room and your father's there?
Mm.
If you can do that, stand up. Stand up right now. Out of 1,200 youth, man, it wasn't even half the room.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
we're watching kids not being able to be able to touch help, touch
right.
opportunity, touch
mm-hmm.
resource. Not even at their leisure, but what they can touch negativity, touch poverty, touch crime, touch police brutality. They see it every day.
Right.
We got to kind of transform that thought process and be able to bring a little bit more unity together, man, so that they can know that, you know what, I'm still going to help you. I'm still going to
mm-hmm.
be here, you
mm-hmm.
know, regardless.
Yeah.
You ain't got to wait. You ain't got to watch Lil Wayne and Jay-Z and aspire to be like them. Aspire to be better than what your situation is right now.
Exactly. Because you know something
be
that was brought up earlier about the uncle, the father,
right.
excuse me, the uncle, the brother, the father, you know, because
right.
you may not have the father in your home, but
right.
is there a man in your life somewhere, you know, is there an older brother somewhere who's willing to, you know, take up the slack, take up some time? See, I think one of the big things is in our communities we don't have time. So many are so involved and consumed with ourselves and our own lives until
right.
At the end of the day, there's hardly anything left to give above and beyond us, our four, and no more. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because with some of this and what you're saying, that is a powerful picture to me, with you standing before 1,200 youth. I mean, just that alone, whether you ask them any questions or not, you have a place where 1,200 youth are gathered. Think about that.
Right.
And so you're able to speak into their lives, and then they leave that place and they go somewhere else. But if they don't have a daddy to walk to in the next room, who do they have? And it should be somebody. And somebody,
right.
and you know, it's wonderful if they do have a male, but even if they don't, if they have somebody that they can rely on, someone that they can trust, somebody who cares, I think that's what's missing a lot from our communities is that youth not feeling like they have someone whom they can trust, you know, somebody
right.
who they can turn to, somebody who really has their back. If you can imagine growing up like that, you know, who has my back? No, you know, who do I turn to when I'm hurting?
Right. Right.
And you don't have that at all. You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't
right.
have
exactly.
that safety net. So that's what we see, I think, a lot. And I just always draw back to the fact that, you know, my husband and I raised four sons. And,
right.
you know, I know I'm finding out things now that they dealt with when they were out,
right.
you know, in the streets.
Right.
And I saw them trying to fit in. You know,
mm-hmm.
when we came here, they had spent their elementary years on an island on Guam, and we came to this D.C. metropolitan area, and I watched them try to fit in, and I saw them going through changes, not things that they were learning in the home, but they had to survive when they left our front door. They had to survive out there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I saw that. Yeah. I mean, let me pause a minute because we have many people. I wish people would just join us, join in on the conversation because, you know, it's key for us to be able to talk to one another.
Right.
Let's see if we can get someone to share in the conversation before it's time for us to go. 0988, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, go right ahead. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Good evening. I'm enjoying the conversation. And I just wanted to just add in, tonight I'm enjoying the brother Dunn who's speaking. You know, when I think about God's plan for talking about the body of Christ, and when you look at so many of our cities, we have so many churches several churches sometimes in a corner on the block and in neighborhoods, and I don't see the churches doing what I think they need to do to reach back, particularly and for the young people to be big brothers and big sisters. And like you said, in some of a lot of our communities, particularly if it's in a poor neighborhood, a lot of the people that are congregants in that congregation, they don't live in that neighborhood. And they don't have that desire to come and get involved and to give back. And I think it's unfortunate because a generation or two ago, that's something that we had. I can speak for myself with my son and trying to raise him and help him through peer pressure in the call of the street, I would say. I had my father, because I was a divorced woman, I had my father and my brothers to step in to be that, to be that person for him to look to. But I guess, you know, what I would really love to see, and being concerned about, the downtrodden, you know, how do we motivate one another to, you know, to do what God wants us to do as people of God, to have humility, long-suffering for our people, and to stir them up. And I know this can be done with Christ, and through God all things are possible. But, how do we do that today? You know, bring back that same passion and concern for one another, because it's greatly needed. And, again, I'm enjoying it, and I'm going to get off and hear what you all have to say. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. You want to respond?
One is definitely, I 100% agree with you. We're finding now churches on the same block with the liquor stores, and we have hundreds of churches within hundreds of miles of each other. So as churches definitely need to be able to have a better effort in being able to open up their doors for youth in terms of programs. And this really people who are in need. We're watching now, and this is unfortunate, and there's a lack of trust. One of the things you said, Leslie, in terms of trust, there's a lack of trust for the church where it wasn't like that before. So if we look back at what those things that worked, those things that mattered, those things that built our village and our community, and look where we are now, there's a lack of trust in churches. There's a lack of trust in schools. And we're also watching where in the school systems they're different, you know. I mean, we're seeing individuals that, you know, don't demand that the kids at least address them as sir or ma'am, and, you know, and they spend 35 hours a week in school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing, that, again, that the village is definitely smaller. And so getting back to our church, they can definitely be a part of the solution and not just a part of the conversation. And so building those relationships where, you know, they can be able to say, you know what, let me open a youth center, or let me create a job training program with, you know, one service. We're just going to say all the funding here is going to be able to help train individuals how to be able to interview or how to be able to get a trade. So there are opportunities, especially when we're seeing it. So with that lack of trust in the churches, and this is not speaking for all the churches, but we need to be honest with each other. We need to be able to hold each other accountable and not take this thing personal. If I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, you should be able to hold me accountable. And I say, you know what, you're right. and then work on improving, not take it personal and all of a sudden don't want to do anything else. So we need to be honest. This is real conversations that we're having. We're watching the churches be a billion. It's a billion-dollar industry in terms of churches. Individuals are flying in helicopters and jets and personally, and we've got the same individuals that are in that church who can't find a job or don't have resources or can't even turn to the church to be able to get the resources. That's a problem. That's a problem. So whether we want to hear it, whether we agree with it, whether that's your church or not, as my grandmother said, if the shoe fit, wear it. If it don't put them on. But that's a problem. But that's the truth. You know, it's a real truth that we see that, you know, mega millions are being made, but yet we're watching the same people that are coming and contributing to the growth of the church not being able to turn to the church, not just about prayer. And we know that prayer, man, and faith, because I just put a quote out that said that our strength comes from our faith, not from our past. So, you know, faith is what keeps us going, per se, but we also need some real results. We need some real support. And so we should be able to have a hand. I should be able to walk into the church and be able to say that, you know, help me. We know the church is powerful. And let me give you an example, and I want to speak to this real quickly about how we know how powerful the church is. We have watched the Charleston killings. We saw that. And one of the most powerful messages that touched me and probably many of the people, it was the fact that the victims, through the vessel of pain, knowing you lost your loved one, knowing you would never see him again, knowing through the hate that came out of the mouth of Dylan Roof, say to him, I forgive you. Now, if that doesn't tell you that there's a true God, because that had to have came from the man upstairs. There's no counseling session that we could have sent any of them that would have encouraged them to think that that would be a conversation that came as a result of that. That just tells you how powerful churches can be, and that having some faith and how that strength can allow you to be able to grow. And so when we take that and use that to kind of help with our communities, not just build a rally point, man, we'll be amazed, man, how far we go. And then I'm not saying, too, because we know everyone has their own gripes and stereotypes about church and faith. And as I always said, even when I was in Iraq, listen, and I said to the kids now, listen, I'm not telling you have to do anything, go to church or practice a certain religion. What I'm saying to you is what I said to the youth, and I've said for years, is that you need to be spiritually connected some kind of way, okay? That right there is, you need that base to be able to help you to be able to overcome some of the challenges that you have. Now,
Exactly. Now, so we need to understand what we're seeing and what you just mentioned to us, and we're going to go to our next caller. But what we're seeing then is the church in action. What we have to understand is that the church is not just those buildings that we see on every corner. The church is resident in people. And if people are not willing to come outside of those buildings, and put in action what really the church is, which is the spirit of Christ indwelling his people, then we put that in action. That's why we're able to see people stand up and say, you know what, I forgive you. It's not those people. It's the spirit of the Lord within them that allows them to do that. That's the church really in operation. You made an excellent point, because that's when people are really able to see the church in operation. You see what I'm saying? Because that goes beyond us, and that's beyond a structural building. That's really some power that you talked about that goes beyond what we're able to do. Let's go to our next caller. We're 2323, and thank you for joining us tonight.
How you doing?
Doing just fine. Thank you
so
much.
Hey, this is Mike Keys from the Capital Beltway League. How you doing?
Hey, Mike. What's going on, man?
Hey, I know Dunn for a couple of years now. He's an excellent guy. He does a lot for the community, and I just wanted to say, now I was one of those troubled youth coming up, and when I was about 15, I was getting in trouble, and my mother was like, didn't know what to do with me. My dad didn't know what to do with me, and then one day she took me on a bus, and she took me across the street from a Boys and Girls Club, and on the other side was St. Elizabeth's Hospital. She said, you got a choice. You can either go over here, or you can go to this Boys Club, and I went to the Boys Club. Met some great mentors and got into boxing and never turned back. So, you know, it really changed my life. And I always appreciated that. And Once I graduated from high school and got myself established, I went back and I started coaching. I started trying to mentor these kids and giving back, you know, to these kids like I was given, like the opportunity was given to me. But I want to say is these kids today, they're just a different breed. And I just want to know what ways we can, what can I do to reach more kids now? I mean, back in the day, you know, you could easily go up to a kid and it was like, hey, you got to do this, and you can be harsh with them. But these days, you just can't reach them that way. And I just want some pointers from you on how to better reach kids.
All right. Well, you know, put you on hold. Thank you again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay,
yeah, well,
we have
know,
about 5 minutes. I want you to really speak to that one. That's
yeah, well, first of all, Mike, thanks for calling. I appreciate that. And we all are part of that. I think one of the things is that their approach has to be different. You're right. Their approach used to be a lot stronger when we were younger. When we were troubled kids, we were a lot tougher. You know, our core was tough. So we could take it when a coach or a parent or somebody else's parent kind of got on us. See, the kids are a little, their core is not as strong. So our approach has to be a little softer. So I think oftentimes is that, you know, what I do, especially when the kids are walking to my community center, and I know that whether it be pulling their pants up or taking their hat off, first thing I do is, yo, how you doing? Come here. You know, my approach is more softer to them to get to know them. You know, how was your day first? You know, find out what's going on with them. And then ask them, well, what is it that I can do to help you? And even when they're not receiving, say, you know what? I know you ain't trying to hear it, but I'm going to still be here tomorrow trying to help you. So I let them know that I'm not, that regardless of your tone, it won't change my tone. I see the same thing on the Metro. Kids are cursing. I'll give you more recently. A bunch of kids that was out there cursing, and, you know, using the N-word. And, you know, we were on the train, and there's me and there's a few other guys. And so I watched it for a second, and then I went over and I said, you know, you guys know that this right here, you know, if your mom or grandma right here, she's not going to hear this, man. You know, mm-hmm. you may change it or may not change it, but just think about it. It's somebody else's grandmother or mother here. I tried to make it more personal to them that they could understand. Oftentimes, kids don't even think. I mean, we know that. We didn't think. We just did stuff just based on reaction. So I think oftentimes is that we got our approach has to be different initially. But two, we find out where they're at. Most kids want things like jobs and money. I've been able to reach some kids by saying the same troubled kids, look, come in, come help me out. Like the same one that's cursing, come help me out. Here, let me give you a few dollars right here for helping me out. That was just the beginning of me building a relationship with him or her.
Mm-hmm.
And letting them know I'm going to give you something for doing something good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm going to reward you for doing something good. I don't care, no matter how small it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Whether that be food, whether that be, you know, we do Chick-fil-A Fridays at Marlow Heights Community Center throughout the summer. I've been doing it for 3 years. That means
wow.
that you come on Fridays and give you a free Chick-fil-A box. You know, so
awesome.
it's, you know, we give something to them. And I think that the approach of that, look, I'm gonna take care of you, I'm gonna help you out, I'm gonna give you something. It changes the tone. I mean, you'd be amazed if a kid is cursing and you go in there and say, look, I got $5 right there, if somebody can't curse no more. You know what I mean? You know,
yeah.
just use an example, but those are the things that our approach has to be a little different. So, you know, oftentimes, you know, we, again, that's find out where the kid's at before we take it where we
yeah.
want them to go, just because of the way the breed of the kids are there. They're not getting their home either.
Well, this has been great. Listen, callers, I know that you appreciate the time that Dunn has spent with us tonight, and he and I have already talked. He's going to come back. We're going to do it again. We're going to do it again in the next, in the next few weeks, in another month or so. So just keep on the lookout for it. And we want you to come back and be ready for some dialogue. We're going to have a young lady with us next week who's going to be sharing with us about her journey, having gone in one day for an in-and-out surgery, and then in the midst of all of that, coming out an amputee. But God is doing some great things with her. Now her life has been turned upside down, but she's turning some things upside down for the Lord. Dunn, we thank you for being with us tonight. This has been great, man, and so challenging. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, we're looking forward to the future. You're coming back, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. We look forward to that. Thank you, our guests, and all of you who chimed in. God, we give you glory, honor, and praise. We believe you, O Lord, to help us to have the wisdom to go forward and make a change in our community, in our youth, in our home. We give you glory for it even now. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you for joining us for When Passion Meets Purpose. Join us again next Monday at the same time, 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. God bless you and have a great evening.